Welcome back to The Filibuster, the podcast of the Union University Political Science Department. We are continuing our discussion of the House politics and the dysfunction in the House of Representatives. This is part two of that discussion, and we're going to go right back to Sean Evans, who's going to talk to us about what's been going on. So far in the story, we have discussed how we got to this position. We've discussed the rise and fall of Speaker McCarthy. So what happened next?
Okay, what we see then was it took 3 weeks for the Republicans to find a replacement.
3 weeks. Is that an unusual amount of time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was the longest the House has ever gone without a speaker.
Oh, so this is the record.
But this isn't those records you want to have as far as that goes. Yeah.
Well, is there anyone who benefits from the delay?
Nobody benefits from this. I mean, this goes to something we talked about earlier as we were walking over here. I mean, this isn't good for anyone. I mean, we talked about how God ordains government to perform certain functions, and if government is incapable of acting, it's incapable of performing those functions. So while we may disagree on what those functions should be, we should all agree that if it can't do what it's supposed to, that's a problem.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So our story evolves to have some more characters now, right?
Yeah, so first of all, they have to find a replacement.
Yeah.
So Steve Scalise, the House Majority Leader, wins the nomination over Jim Jordan, but he doesn't go to the floor because he finds out that enough members won't vote for him, so he pulls out.
What was the problem with him?
They didn't want him. I mean, okay. So the idea was they thought they kicked out McCarthy. They thought, let's get someone who we want. And while Scalise is more conservative than McCarthy, he's also been in the leadership for a long time. Their preference was Jim Jordan, who came in second. So when Scalise found out he kind of the votes, he couldn't get it, he withdrew. They had a new election. Jordan won. So House Freedom Caucus people were thrilled about this. One of our own. I mean, Jordan was one of the founding members of the House Freedom Caucus. But one thing. When you use tactics against other people, they can use it against you.
Ah.
And so what happened was the more moderate member said, no, we don't like the way you treated McCarthy. We're going to do the same thing to Jordan. And so Jordan went to the floor, lost on the first vote. Second vote, he lost more votes. And part of the thing was they said, they said, just like the Freedom Caucus or members of the Freedom Caucus, most of the Freedom Caucus members did support McCarthy in the vote, but there were a section who weren't. But a bunch didn't want Scalise. And this group said, just because you wanted to stop him, we're going to stop your choice. And what's more, they started playing hardball by threatening to run primary opponents against these people and other things, which backfired across the conference, because if you do that to one person, you can do it to all of them. And so Jordan's support just started to evaporate over time, to eventually he realized he wasn't going to win, and then he pulled out.
So on the most practical level, can you just walk us through the math? Why is it so hard to get these votes? Why do they need so many votes?
Because you have to have a majority of those present and voting. So you need 200. So you need more than the other side, as long as there are enough people voting. So you really, really need 217 votes. And if people don't vote for you, you don't win. Now, if you can get people to vote present, that lowers the number you have to win, but not so many present so that the other side doesn't win. Because remember, the Democrats have 210 seats. They're not that far behind.
Was there ever a scenario where the Democrats could have changed one of these votes?
No. There was talk at one point, would the moderates work with the Dems to form a bipartisan coalition? Those have happened in states, but that would have had the whole ire of the conservative media establishment, conservative organizations against those people, and so they never would have done that.
That makes sense. So Jim Jordan, Steve Scalise, what happens next?
Well, next they went to Tom Emmer, who was the House Majority Whip, but he voted in favor of same-sex marriage. He did not. He voted to certify the election. Trump came out against him, and thus he withdrew before a vote on the floor.
So why did they think that would work?
Why did they think what would work?
Emmer.
Well, because members of the House Freedom Caucus, some said, hey, Emmer works with us. We feel comfortable with him. But then once he got the nomination, someone like, no, we're not
going
to go.
So just the process of politics had to roll first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so at that point, we're like, okay, who can we elect?
Yeah.
And in comes Mike Johnson. So
who's Mike Johnson?
Mike Johnson was vice chair of the House Republican Conference. He's been in office 6 years. He was chair of the Republican Study Committee for 2 years before becoming vice chair of the Republican Conference, which meant he's probably like the fifth ranking party leader. So he's kind of low on the totem pole as far as that goes. But he was able to be elected speaker due to a combination of fatigue. People were just tired of this. Let's elect somebody. Two, luck. He happened to be the person people could agree on. Because three, he didn't have many enemies at all. And so part of this is he's largely unknown. There's not a reason for people to dislike him. He's someone who votes conservative, who has allied with the House Freedom Caucus at times, but is not part of the Freedom Caucus. And so with his moderate demeanor, people said, okay, let's rally behind him.
Do you think this is what the Freedom Caucus was hoping would happen? They could just wear down the rest of the Republicans until they got somebody in?
Well, yes. Yeah, so I think there were some people like Mike Gates said, we won, we got MAGA Mike elected speaker. Yeah, well, I'm not sure he's MAGA Mike as far as that goes. But the fact that he had worked with them, he was more conservative.
More than McCarthy?
Oh yeah. So McCarthy was around the 40 percentile. We have someone like Johnson was around the 65 percentile. By that, I mean more conservative than 65% of Republicans in the House.
Okay.
Now, so yeah, they were happy someone liked them, but I think also it meant that Johnson was new. He's never really tried to put together large coalitions together. And so what it meant is we were going to have a weak speaker, which I think is what a lot of the Freedom Caucus wanted.
So what is a weak speaker then?
Well, a weak speaker is one who can't really impose his will on others. So basically, if you listen to a lot of members on the far right, what they wanted was to decentralize power away from the speaker to return to regular order.
So they thought the speaker was too powerful.
Yes. So, I mean, what happened? Okay, so we have two ideological parties. To pass anything, you have to empower the leader to get things done.
Right.
But the thing is, this means the speaker is the one writing the policy because the speaker is the one in contact with everyone about what is and is not possible, and so people have to rely upon him. What that meant is, according to some people, is that means we're getting less conservative policy than we want. The idea is if we can decentralized power, we can negotiate with people and move legislation closer to what we want. So they thought with more regular order, they would have more influence. But since they're on the far right, that probably means they're less likely to pass stuff during regular order. So they have to have a way to force people to work with them, and so they're big proponents of the Hastert rule, named after former Speaker Dennis Hastert, which says the Speaker can only bring bills to the floor that a majority of the Republican conference support. So the idea is if they raise a stink about a bill, they'll say Hastert rule, and the leader doesn't want to really take a vote. Okay, do half of the party support it? Which means they're forcing everyone to negotiate with them.
So they're making themselves the center of that negotiation process. Is that good politics? Is this going to work?
Well, it's good politics for the House Freedom Caucus. I'm not sure it's good politics for the Republican Party.
And before we move on here, you've used the term regular order a few times. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, the basic idea is that when bills are introduced, they're referred to committee and then subcommittee. And the idea is they'll start in the subcommittee. They'll go from the subcommittee to the full committee. There'll be full hearings. There will be a chance to amend. And then once it goes to the full committee, it'll pass, it'll go to the House Rules Committee and then go to the floor. And then it will be open to amendments on the floor in theory. The idea is that this allows sponsors of bills to build coalitions along the way, which means you have to negotiate with everyone along the way to pass your bill.
And the alternative to this is?
Is the speaker talking to everyone, figuring out what needs to be done and saying, here's what the best option is.
So which of these are more likely to lead to legislation?
Well, it depends upon what kind of legislation.
So what kind of legislation would you likely get under general order?
Under regular order you're more likely to get bipartisan legislation, because in the process of trying to compromise to pass a bill, you can get Democrats to vote for it. Mm-hmm. And if you can get moderate Democrats to vote for it, that means you need fewer of the far right people. Mm-hmm. And so that actually can potentially decrease their power. So regular order is going to actually increase the chance of bipartisan bills passing.
But that doesn't sound to me like something the Freedom Caucus would want there.
Which is why they have the Hastert rule to create incentives for people to work within the party so that the moderates have to work with the far right and move policy closer to what they want. So the whole idea is, instead of having policy reflect the median member of the House, which would be a more moderate Republican, which would be closer to the general public at large, you're moving bills closer to the median party member, which means it's going to reflect more of what party activists want.
So practically, what is this going to do then?
In terms of
the future of the House. I mean,
it all depends. If they really trust regular order, it could lead to more bipartisan bills that can make more people happy, nationwide, maybe not within the House. And that's good for them. But if you want to pass ideological bills, mm-hmm. you're going to need someone to crack heads to push those bills through. And that's where you're going to need a strong leader to do that.
Which they maybe can't have now.
Which they don't want. Right.
Right.
Unless it's one that's going to crack heads to push what they want.
Right.
But the problem is, that means the further you move to the right, the more difficult you have with the moderate members of your party, in which case they can say no, and then they can extract concessions to move it further to the middle, but then do you lose people on the right?
Right.
That's the problem with small majorities and passing things solely with party members.
Well, that sounds kind of difficult. Is Mike Johnson up to the challenge?
Ask me in 6 months. Well, no.
I mean, that's it.
I mean, on the bright side, if we look at his Center for Legislative Effectiveness score, he's in the top 25 in the House.
Okay.
That's good. But he's never passed a bill like what he's going to have to pass bill. It's here like to fund the government and everything else. So we're not really sure how he's going to turn out. I mean, there are some people who say, okay, he's not known, so they can't Pelosi-ize him. But then I don't think that's less of a problem, because if Trump's running, they'll talk about Trump more than they would Mike Johnson. But the thing is, does he have the chops to build coalitions to pass major bills?
Right.
Can't he fundraise? Because he's never had to fundraise like this before. And so what he has done is he's promised to keep the current leadership of the Congressional Leadership Fund, which is the House Republican Super PAC, which Kevin McCarthy raised oodles of money for. Hmm. So the question is, will Johnson be able to do that? And the question is, will he manage an unwieldy conference? We talk about ideologically coherent parties, but there's more diversity within the party than many people think.
Hmm. So what do we expect is going to happen in the future of the House then? Is he going to be able to hang on to this position? Is he going to be able to get things done?
I don't know. I think for right now, since he's more conservative, he's going to be cut some slack by the far right.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, will they cut him enough slack? What we have already seen is that he is pushing back against what some things that Biden and the Senate wants. So, for example, Biden wants one bill with Ukraine, Israel, and border funding.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson has said, no, we don't have the votes for it. We'll do Israel only, and then we'll do Ukraine after that. But the idea is what he's saying is we'll do an Israel bill, but he's saying we have to pay for it, which is what we don't traditionally do with these kinds of supplemental bills. But he wants to pay for it by taking away spending that Democrats voted for in their big Inflation Reduction Act, which means it's a non-starter with the Senate, and it's already poisoned the well with the Democrats in the House. But from Johnson's perspective, this idea, hey, we're putting vulnerable Democrats in a difficult situation. Vote against this bill, and you voted against Israel,
mm-hmm.
and you voted for reducing funding to the IRS. You vote for it, and you voted to reduce funding for the IRS, which increases his leverage to get the Senate and Biden to go along with it. Mm. So it's put these Democrats in a vulnerable position, which they don't like, and it's going nowhere in the Senate and with President Biden.
Well, that's complicated. That's some tough accounting there.
And that's just Israel. That doesn't deal with Ukraine. That doesn't deal with funding the government. And it doesn't deal with any of the other major things that we might want the government to deal with.
So this sounds like there might be a lot more drama yet to come in the House.
Oh, absolutely.
What are some things we should be looking for?
Well, I think the first thing we're going to have to look at is how well that Johnson can manage the five families. All right, so when people, the idea of the five families comes from the movie The Godfather, all right? Okay. So I don't know if you've seen The Godfather, right? Oh, Seth, you've never seen The Godfather.
I know, it's a problem.
Yeah.
I've been told many times.
We may have to kick you out of the department.
I understand the consequences.
Yeah, okay, we won't do that. But the idea is that there are mob families.
Yes.
And there is a godfather who kind of manages the tensions within them. Now, this is what's been referred to. The Republican leadership doesn't really like that because the families turned on each other in the movie The Godfather.
Right.
And that's not what they want to see. But there's basically five groups within the conference. On the far right, we've talked about the House Freedom Caucus. They have about 35 members. Next is the Republican Study Committee. This was created back in 1970 to be a caucus for conservatives to not be a Me Too Republican. The idea of there were Republicans who said, we support the things that Democrats do, we'll just manage it better. Mm. The Republican Study Committee said, no, we have conservative solutions for this. But the idea is it's so large, it has 80% of the conference, which means it's not all that conservative. Kind of the centrist caucus is the Main Street caucus. This has about 67 members. They want conservative economic and national security policy. So they're what we would consider traditional conservatives. But They're willing to cut deals to pass bills with only Republican votes. They want to get Republican bills passed. Next, to the left of them would be the Republican Governance Group, which has 42 members. These are the institutionalists. They want the House to function. They want to govern. They want to pass bills.
They've had a bad few weeks.
They've had a bad few decades, right. I mean, is one way of looking at it. These tend to be physically conservative and socially moderate. But what they understand is if they want to pass bills, they need to be in the majority, so they're willing to defend the interest of the most vulnerable members so they stay in office, so they stay in the majority. And then the most moderate group are the problem solvers. There's about 29 of those members, and they seek bipartisan solution. These are the ones who are the most vulnerable. They represent districts that Biden won, and so they need to be seen doing bipartisan stuff. And the thing about the problem solvers is when they add someone, they have to add another member of the other party to make sure that the Problem Solvers Caucus is always split between Democrats and Republicans.
So it's an equal number.
Yes. Yeah. With that. So you have all these different groups with different views and different strategies of how to accomplish their goals.
Now, is this a matter of making coalitions within the group, or do you need basic unanimity across the group?
If you're going to pass bills on a straight party line vote, you need unanimity among the five families.
Well, that sounds tough.
Yeah. So what McCarthy tried to do was meet with the leaders of the five families once a week about every bill that's coming up, what their members thought, what's the best way to move forward. I think that's what we're going to have to see. But what we're going to have to realize is some of these people have incompatible goals. And so how do you manage that if you're Mike Johnson?
Well, how do you manage that? Because it sounds like he's just as vulnerable as McCarthy was.
That's correct.
So what does this mean for his ability to do anything?
That's a good question. I mean, it's something that's going to play. I mean, at some point, he's going to have to take a stand.
Well,
and he'll have to side with some groups. And once he does that, so for example, if you want to fund the government, you're going to have to work with the Democrats, which means you're probably working with the problem solvers, the Republican Governance Group, and the Main Street Caucus.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be costly.
Yes. And so the question is, it still takes one person to move to vacate the speakership. Will they hold that over Johnson like a sword of Damocles like they used over McCarthy?
Right. Well, it's a lot to pay attention to. It's going to be messy. Any last thoughts about this?
Well, I think the thing I'd say is the House Freedom Caucus members are making strategic mistakes. They're picking their fights in divided government when they can't win. In divided government, you have to compromise with the other side. So pick and choose your battles. They would be better off, I would say, picking and choosing their battles here, get what they can, and then try to win the Senate and the presidency, and then you can push through more conservative ideas. Right now, you're just forcing moderate members in vulnerable districts to take difficult votes, which the Democrats are happy for them to take, but it makes it more difficult for Republicans, A, to keep the majority, and B, to win the presidency.
Now, isn't that all just assuming that their goal is policy, though?
But yes, but if you're the far right and you're committed to an ideology, then you have to want to advance
that. That's true. All right. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts, Sean, and your insights on this, and I will be yielding the balance of my time, and we can end this discussion. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.